Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain and have Sean in studio. I want you to know that this show is about what matters most in life, our mind, our thoughts, feelings, actions, relationships, and our fulfillment in this beautiful journey of life. In this show, I'll bring you the latest research about the traumatic brain injury that gets acquired by domestic violence, intimate partner violence, and which is often diagnosed. And then I'll speak to Sherry Genga, the author of The Shattered Oak, Overcoming Domestic Abuse and Misdiagnosis of Mental Illness, based on a true story of Barbara. You can call us in the studio line, 951-922-3532, and be sure to listen to my podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Please write a review. Please tell your friends and email me if you'd like to share a topic that you're interested in. I'll be glad to bring the latest on that topic for you. We'll be right back with the tip of the week.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET1490AM.com.
Well, this is the tip of the week. How much this controlling and controlling others is different than being in control? I think there's an element of being in control, which means being aware and being in control of my thoughts, of my emotions, of my actions, of my intentions, what it is that I create, and kind of like being on the driver's seat of the car that I'm driving. So I'm not necessarily controlling the car because I have no idea what's in the car and how the motor runs. And even if I do, I'm not really necessarily controlling all aspects of it. I probably only are controlling the gas pedal and the brakes, and that's pretty much all that I am, and the steering wheel that I'm driving with. But many aspects of the car I'm not controlling, but I am in control of three aspects of it. And if you take the same analogy with our life, this is what we do. We are not in control of every aspect of life. It's a co-creation with others, but there's an area that I am in control, and I can be, and hopefully I am. And because when we go out of control, we panic, we have a lot of anxiety and depression, and we feel helpless and hopeless. So it's important to be in control of our life and our destiny and what we want to do. There's a difference between controlling. Controlling means I want to control the external world. People can attempt to control the outside world, and they do that in different forms. They'll do it in manipulative stance. They'll do it with violence. They'll do it with bullying. They'll attempt to control the scenario that is happening. Another concept is that we try to control the people who are around us, because we're all in some sort of a relationship, whether it's at work or whether it's intimate relationship, our children, friends, family members that are around us. And sometimes it appears that instead of focusing on ourselves and seeing what is it that I'm in control or not in control, I actually attempt to control others in order to make it easier for myself or be in power. We're going to talk a lot about this in today's show, where how being controlling, which only suits me, and being domineering and taking your power, the essence of anger and the power of anger, and bringing it and kind of like adding it to attempting to control others, and what it does to the relationship and what it does to the self and what it does to the other person. Those relationships will not last, because ultimately nobody wants to be controlled. You can imagine, have you ever attempted to control someone? Has that really lasted? If they're your employees, they'll leave you at one point. If they're your mate, they'll leave you at one point. If they're your children, they'll definitely grow up and leave you at one point. So it does not matter how much you try to control, at one point that will shatter. And even countries, they try to control their people. They might be there for years, but at least at one point things will change and people will actually attempt to get free, because every single human being needs their freedom. They will fight for their freedom, and one way or another they will get the power to gain their freedom. And at the time when they were being controlled, they will hold resentment, they will hold rage and anger on their own. So, and as you're listening, I really suggest to look at the areas of your life. What are the areas of your life that you are in control? What are the areas that you think you're not in control and you can't be in control? What are the areas in your relationships that you try to control another being? And you might, you know, avoid even being controlled. So look at those areas and see how much those areas are working for you. My suggestion is, instead of attempting to control others, because you can't, even if you do, it's very short term, and it's only an illusion, because that person is only looking at figuring out how to get out of your control anyway. So it's a very short term concept. Try to relate to people from a place of knowing, what is it that I can be in control of myself, and create and see what it is that you want to read in relationship. If you create that relationship out of love, understanding, and wanting to be together, and valuing yourself, that if you are in a relationship, in any form of relationship, that people are there because they value you, because they love you, because they want to be with you. And if you have those qualities that are lovable and attracts people to be with you, then you don't really need to control them. They will be with you. You don't have to be worried about it. And if you really don't have those characters that people get attracted to you and want to love you, then my suggestion is acquire those characters and be that, so that you will love yourself and others will, and just be in control of what it is that you can be. The other way just doesn't work, I promise you. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with two research regarding domestic violence and traumatic brain injury.
Hello, I'm Dr. Fujian, and I have great news for you. I'm offering a special time-limited offer to anyone who's interested in online therapy or coaching sessions. I've developed the awareness integration model, which allows in only 12 weeks to raise your self-esteem and confidence and let go of your thoughts and emotions that produce depression and anxiety for you. So call today to schedule your online session and save $600. Call me today at 818-648-2140. That's 818-648-2140. Or go to www.fujian.com.
Here are the latest research, actually in October 2019. Domestic violence survivors commonly suffer repeated blows to the head and strangulation, trauma that has lasting effects that should be widely recognized by advocates, healthcare providers, law enforcement, and others who are in a position to help. According to the authors of the new study, in the first community-based study of its kind, researchers from the Ohio State University and the Ohio Domestic Violence Network found that 81% of women who have been abused at the hands of their partners and seek help have suffered a head injury, and 83% have been strangled. The research suggests that brain injury caused by blows to the head and by oxygen deprivation are likely ongoing health issues for many domestic violence survivors. Because of poor recognition of these lasting harms, some interactions between advocates and women suffering from the effects of these unidentified injuries were likely misguided. And this study was appeared in Journal of Aggression and Maltreatment Trauma. One in three women in the United States have experienced intimate partner violence or domestic violence. What the researchers found led them to believe that many people are walking around with undiagnosed brain injury that needs to be addressed. So this study is the first to establish that many survivors have likely experienced repeated head injuries and oxygen deprivation, a combination that could contribute to more severe problems, including memory loss, difficulty understanding, loss of motivation, nightmares, anxiety, and trouble with vision and hearing. Almost half of the women in this study said they've been hit in the head and their head shoved into another object too many times to remember. More than half were shocked or strangled a few times, and one in five said it happened too many times to remember. In some cases, the survivors lived through both experiences times. The reports from the women's in the domestic violence programs throughout Ohio already have prompted changes to how the statewide advocacy group and the programs it works with are helping the survivors they serve. They've created a model called CARE for Connect, Acknowledge, Respond, and Evaluate. Almost all of the best practice recommendations for traumatic brain injuries are focused on athletes and soldiers, and some of the guidance is impractical for the population of the domestic violence. These women could be having trouble being able to plan for the future, to make decisions about their safety, to come to appointments, to do their jobs. Many have likely been wondering for years going on with them. For instance, someone who can never remember to show up for counseling at the right time, or who's combative with a roommate, might be seen as a troublemaker, which is really at the mercy of brain injury. So that's important for people to know. And if you're listening to us and you know someone who's going through that, I really advise them to go get checked for brain injury. The second study says a study published in the Journal of Violence Against Women by domestic violence experts at the University of Texas at Arlington focuses on an overlooked form of psychological abuse, educational sabotage. Educational sabotage is a form of coercive control that directly affects a survivor's effort to obtain educational credentials. Tactics include disruption of financial aid or academic efforts, physical violence, and inducing guilt related to academic efforts. Those strategies are a serious hindrance to the successful completion of educational programs and ultimately the economic independence and safety of survivors. This form of violence is used by one of the partners as a means of furthering their own power and control over the other partner. Pursuing higher education can be perceived as a threat by the abusing party. In the study, participants identified several ways in which educational sabotage affected their lives. Impacts included diminished academic achievement, emotional and mental health challenges, and positively an increased desire to overcome such an obstacle. Educational sabotage is considered a form of intimate partner violence, which is a factor of 16.5% of all homicides in the U.S., according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The agency estimates 1 in 4 women and nearly 1 in 10 men have experienced intimate partner violence during their lifetime. Pursuing higher education can be a catalyst for breaking out of the isolation and cycles of dependency that often accompany intimate partner violence. This is an issue that is across the board, across socioeconomic levels, it's across educational, and it's across countries. This is one aspect that really needs to stop. And the more we get educated about it, the more we talk about it, the more you're watching for it, the more you're watching for everyone around you who is a baby suffering or that they're bullying and creating, and the more that you get involved and allow this not to happen, the better it is for everyone in the community, the neighborhood, and every single woman and man and the children who are growing up in these violent homes. Which end up being violent themselves and either go through addiction and all. So everyone can help on this issue. So please do. I'm grateful that I have Sherry Genga. He's the author of Shattered Oak, the book Shattered Oak, which is based on a true story about an anguish of domestic violence, divorce, attempted suicides, and incarceration in the mental institution. Sherry was a businesswoman and an entrepreneur who speaks in classrooms to young entrepreneurs at local colleges, inspiring them with the skills and resources on how to invent and develop new product. Sherry is a firm believer of everything happens for a reason. Barbara's story has a profound stance on the world.
If she knew she could not fail, she would spread the word on paper and post it on every oak tree, every bulletin board, and every ear willing to listen. So the more she shares the story, the more she can see a strong perspective of healing and delicate mind that are so unbalanced. She has learned so much while writing The Shattered Oak and feeling Barbara's emotional pain that she's mapped out her own path of a more positive life. She wrote The Shattered Oak with the intention of empowering hope and strength to those who need help with domestic abuse, depression, suicide, or mental health. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Sherry Genka. Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fujian Zain. You can get it now at Fujian.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want. You deserve it. Hello, I'm Dr. Fujian, and I have great news for you. I'm offering a special time-limited offer to anyone who's interested in online therapy or coaching sessions. I've developed the awareness integration model, which allows in only 12 weeks to raise your self-esteem and confidence and let go of your thoughts and emotions that produce depression and anxiety for you. So call today to schedule your online session and save $600. Call me today at 818-648-2140. That's 818-648-2140. Or go to www.fujian.com.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET1490AM.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, and I'm so excited to have Sherry Genka, the author of Shattered Oak, with us. Welcome to my show, Sherry.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Your book is very close to my heart. I have worked almost 17 years, close to 20 years with domestic violence victims. I created actually a shelter and a transitional housing for those families. So as I was going through and looking and feeling, it really hit home a lot for me in about, well, all that I had experienced beside people who had gone through that. I've gone through a little bit of it myself, but nothing like what I have gone through with clients and the suffering that they go. Tell me, Sherry, what got you to meet Barbara, and what is it about Barbara's story and life in kind of enriched you and inspired you to write your book?
So it's actually a story of my mother.
Surprise.
Since I was a young child, about 18 years old or so, I just knew her story was impactful and it should be written into a book or turned into a movie. And here I am 40 years later. I never really, well, 30 years later. And I got the opportunity to write her story. So I was trying to do her justice and you know, I lived it, she lived the pain, but I just really wanted to help others with domestic violence, suicide, and mental illness.
Yes. So from someone who was a firsthand observer of this concept, tell us about your experience as a young child and what you saw as far as what your mom was going through and your own experience with it.
I was young. I was, they got divorced when I was 7. But it was very traumatic as a child. You know, you're scared. All of his children were very scared during his outburst. You know, unfortunately, my father's a very, very wonderful man when he doesn't use his temper. But when he showed his temper and he drank, so his outbursts were very, very violent. And my mother paid the, you know, unbearable sacrifice of meanness that came out in him. You know, mm-hmm. he became a monster, which, you know, I think a lot of people with their domestic violence or drinking, that's, you know, it's uncontrollable at that time for that person. And my poor mother, you know, she got the bad stick of it. But yeah, it was very traumatizing. We usually hid. We usually hid why, you know, he would abuse her. Sometimes we try to stop it, but, you know, we're so young, you can't stop it.
It's very difficult. I've heard and I've seen, especially the young teenage boys. Mm. Sometimes when they get about age 18 or 19, they finally, you know, take a stand in front of their fathers. But I've seen when you're younger, you just don't know. You're powerless against all this force that is showing up.
Right.
What was your mom sharing all of these things and her view and what was going on with her? Or was she just depressed at that time and she's just kind of like went inside of herself and just survived?
She was definitely in survival mode. Her family didn't give her any support. My father didn't allow her to have friends. He would trap her at the house. You know, he would disconnect her distributor wires after the abuse, so she couldn't go anywhere. You know, and back then the cops were not as useful. You know, they didn't get involved in domestic abuse as much as they get involved now. So she was definitely in survival mode, you know, and then it was kind of my older sisters helped her a lot, like after the beatings. You know, there was definitely scary times. I remember she got beat so badly. She was unconscious for a long time. And me and my sister were trying to wake her up. And then we finally got her to wake up and she was acting like a young child because she must have got a concussion from, you know, the abuse.
Yes, I just read a story, actual research about the traumatic brain injury that mm-hmm. many victims of domestic violence get because their heads are banged and hit mm-hmm. and they get strangled, so the oxygen doesn't get to their head, and you know, after that there have a lot of personality change, which people yeah. don't know why it's coming yeah. through, but it is because of the brain injury. And I remember yeah. Sherry, that when I used to work at the shelter and the transitional housing, the horrific story of the abuse, the cruelty that had happened. I remember at the beginning, as I was becoming a therapist, I used to listen to people and I just used to go out of the room and I had to go to the bathroom and just like, sorry, but throw up because it was so hard on my body just listening. And I would have night terrors about listening and visualizing what people were going through. And I could see if secondhand that my body was going through that, then what was going on within their system and the resilience that people go through having to endure such a violence. So how was it for you as a young child watching two people who you love, your father and your mother, go through this? So what was your experience as a child being in this environment?
Quiet. You become shy, quiet. a little bit more probably disengaged than you would be if it was a happy family, right? But when they seek divorce and they separated, it was definitely much, the house was much quieter and bearable after then, you know? But then my mother, after all that, she suffered major depression because of all the things that she went through as a child and during her her marriage. And she had a mental breakdown after that, after all the abuse, and it turned into a mental illness. So, yeah, I mean, everybody, I think, goes through different childhoods, and, everybody suffers in different kinds of ways from their childhood. And I don't, you just gotta, somehow I arise and I appreciate and grateful that I'm not in that situation as an adult.
Yes, absolutely. And it's important to know that many people who have gone through that experience as a child, they actually do repeat the same cycle, whether they become the abuser or they become the victim of that, because it's so natural for them, so familiar for them that they don't notice, like they don't have a red alert that shows up when somebody is being abusive to them. It just feels familiar. And then they repeatedly put themselves in that position. I've also seen, and tell me if you have experienced that sometimes with the cycle of violence, sometimes when there are this type of an anxiety, frustration, and picking on a person, the person who's been victimized or has been part of this, they have learned how to fast forward this type of frustration and provoke the person so they can blast and just be done with it. Because this type of an anticipation for a blast to come, sometimes it's harder to endure versus saying, okay, the person is going to blast, I'm just going to endure it and be done with it. Have you experienced that with your mom as she was going through that, or with yourself?
Like I said, unfortunately, I was a little young. I was a young child, so it's hard kind of to remember your younger years. You remember a lot of definitely the yelling and the screaming and the punching and everything going on. But I think because I was so young, I think my sisters would have a better view on that more than me. I think being young maybe been my advantage out of the family, because you don't understand everything that's going on. So I think that might be a difficult question for me to answer. I probably can't give you the correct answer because I just was so young.
Mm-hmm. Sherry, tell me about the process of writing the book, because obviously this is your mom. And although you were young, I'm sure that there's physical memories that are something there. And what was the concept of going through? Did you interview her? Did you interview your sisters? How did you go through and then bring this into putting it in a novel?
Sure, that's a really great question. So for me, my mother got divorced, I was 7 and young with the violence part, but then I still, all my teenage years, I had to deal with the suicide part. She was very suicidal in the mental illness part. She got, because of suicide, she had to go into an institution. So my teenage years were difficult me more than probably the domestic violence part of it, because my sister was 18 and she became my legal guardian while my mother was in the institution. So for me, my harder years were definitely my teenage years, just learning how to cope and going to visit your mother in the institution and, dealing with life in a different kind of way than different a lot of families weren't going through. But ultimately, if you read the book, The Shattered Oak, you'd find out that she got a mental illness because of all this. Sometimes your past creates diseases, right? Stress is a huge factor on your body. So with my mother's case, from all her stress, it became a lot of her mental illness, which really wasn't her fault why she created suicide you know, and did the act of, you know, tried the act of suicide. So for me, writing the book, it was really just interesting, and it became a love, to be honest. It was, I was trying to make my mother proud and make sure I wrote everything the correct way. And every chapter just played out so nicely from chapter to chapter. It really was a beautiful experience.
How did it bring you closer to your mom?
So my mother at the time of the book was dying. She was in a nursing home. So she was kind of in dementia stage. So she would come in and out of, like, it wasn't real dementia. They didn't like quote her as dementia. So some days she would be okay and some days she wouldn't be okay. So I did get to tell her that I was writing the book, and I got to tell her, you know, all about it. My metaphor that I compared her feelings to the oak tree, as the oak tree was taking abuse from Mother Nature. So was it my mother from the fist of my father. So my mother was dying inside out, just like this grand old oak tree, you know, once vibrant and alive, full of oxygen and life. But as Mother Nature struck it, it was dying from the inside out. So for some reason, I was looking at an oak tree in my yard, and it just brought out that it was like my mother dying from the inside out. You know, the branch was hit by lightning, and it just reminded me of my mother and just how her whole life, you know, she had so much to give, but she was dying from the inside out like this oak tree.
Sherry, how do you think that the essence of being in the part of the relationship of your parents and then having to go consistently into a position of maybe even not having your mom because she was, you know, attempting suicide constantly, and to live with someone who has depression and to always have this threat and having mm-hmm. to take care of them, and although you had other sisters to do that also really impacts you. And then after a while, she also goes into dementia. So it's almost like you kept not having your mom, having a glimpse of having your mom, not having her, or having the fear of losing her and having her, and then finally dementia, not having her. How was this for you? How has that impacted your life?
Roller coaster, but I feel that it gives you strength. Yes. For me, going through so much, when you find your independence, you find your strength. And then when you find your strength, you can beat all your battles and you are free from your past. So I found my strength and my independence of just learning how to care for everything ourselves. And it makes you who you are. And I became stronger. And I think a lot of people, if they, you know, if they can figure out to find their strength, their independence, they can look forward instead of looking in the past.
Sure. What was it about your mother's story that you saw, even her resiliency? Because obviously, although mm-hmm. she appeared to go through that relationship, then she was struggling with depression in her life and all mm-hmm. of that. What were the strength that you saw? What was the resiliency that you saw in her?
My mother was so strong. She was only 5'1", but she was so strong. She always looked to the bright side of everything. So, I mean, even during domestic violence, there were days that she was definitely within deep depression, but she would put on a smile a lot of other days. So she was spunky. And I mean, everything she's been through, her childhood, she got abused. She was Cinderella as a child, and, you know, her parents didn't get her clothes, and she had to make her own clothes, and she could never understand why she was never wanted in life. But she always found the good in everybody. She helped everybody. Even when she was going through a hard time, you know, she tried to be the helper. She was just a brave soul. I mean, even going in the institution and what they did to her in the institution and how she came out of the institution and had to go to a special hospital. Bethesda for when, you know, when they find, I think you said you read the book, right?
Yeah, but say it for the people who are wanting to read the book and they can get a glimpse of it.
So, you know, you got to think outside of the box. So my poor mother went through so much, and a lot of her mental illness came from stress. And then there was a savior that realized she had illness, and she went to a special hospital where she became a medical history of, I'll say it, even though you're going to read the book, but she ended up having Cushing's disease. And so many people walk around the world don't even know they have Cushing's disease. It's a very undiagnosed disease because it's so, the symptoms are so common. So, I mean, if people do feel depressed and they feel suicidal, and you have the round face, the puffy shoulders, your extended belly, you bruise easy, it's a simple test you could have your doctor test you for. It's a saliva test. It's a pee test. And, you know, you could get cured so much earlier where you don't have to go into this deep, dark depression where my mother did for suicide. There's, you know, and now they find out dogs get Cushing's disease. Mm-hmm. So she was one of the very first ones to be diagnosed. And she went to the hospital in Bethesda, which is a hospital for where they cure, you know, all kinds of cancers, you know, any new disease goes there. And she was tough as nails in there too, because it's not easy to be the one they're being, you know, being a guinea pig, you know, even though this is a wonderful thing and they're trying to find a cure, you're also the one getting pricked every day, taking blood every day. You know, they got to figure out what medicines work for you. So, you know, that's, she's just a tough, tough woman, you know, and then she gets out and she finds out, I'm not going to tell you the ending of the story, but
don't, because I want people to go buy the book and read it.
Yes, the ending even has a more of a twist where she figures out where her life, why her life was what became of it, and why everything, all the pieces come together.
Wow. She finds the purpose of all of what she had gone through, and it all kind of made sense for her.
Yes. So, you know, the purpose of my book is definitely to help with suicide and domestic violence and mental illness. I did get a great review from this guy in Wichita, Kansas, connected with me, and he said his wife read my book and I saved her life.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, you know, this is so wonderful. I got chills the day he told me. And then him and his wife decided after their conversation, after reading my book, they decided to do a foundation for suicide. So this grant, everybody should look into it. It's called Life Music. It's going to be for suicide. And they found a way to create this great program through music. Mm-hmm. And they're going to do a big benefit concert in Wichita, Kansas in August of 2021. And 20% of the people, like when you're buying a ticket, you would fill out a survey for mental illness. And it'll be a collaboration of data of mental illness. And then when you...
What is it called again?
Yeah, it's going to be a wonderful, wonderful Life Music.
Life Music, okay.
Yeah. And they're going to try it in Wichita, Kansas, because they're the fifth highest in suicide. And then if this concert goes well, they're going to get all major hits, you know, major acts to this performance. And then they're going to have help at this concert, different booths to help for that people can go and visit to get help for mental illness. So it's a new thing. And it's a wonderful thing. They created it all by themselves. From reading my book, they just got inspired and they wanted to help with suicide. So, you know, it's nice that people start foundations and reading a book can spark a foundation, which is a beautiful thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think when something is experienced, when it's heartfelt and, you know, from the first word in your book, it's really heartfelt. It's different when a novelist writes a novel, which I'm sure they're beautiful and there's amazing writers out there. And there's another feel to it when it's personal, when it's, and I know that any novelist, when they write it, some parts of it is personal, but I think when the English is personal, you've gone through through it, and then you're also writing it not only from a place of pain, but also a place of strength. So you've gone through the pain, you've seen somebody else's pain, but also have seen the strength and coming through. And I think that's what creates this hope that when someone reads your book, that they get inspired about action, about an action to go forward and create something. What is the message of your book? Because obviously people are gaining their own messages. They're taking their own, you know, inspiration out of it and moving and creating something. Mm-hmm. What is it that you intended as for the audience or for the readers to gain? And what was your message that you wanted to land on the people's heart?
To create hope and to move forward after any life crisis, you know, whether it be suicide, whether it be domestic violence, illness, create hope and that you can move forward, and that my mother's story along the way hopefully teaches ways to move forward. And, you know, that some stories are meant to be a secret, some stories are meant to be forgotten, and that some stories are meant to be told. And I think a lot of people just need to share their story and get help if you're struggling from domestic violence, suicide. There's so many wonderful programs. And tell a friend and not stay silent. Is, you know, share your story and it gets it out. And journaling, like in my book, I talk about journaling is a good way to get your dark recesses of your thoughts and your fears and your thoughts, to write them down on paper. Even if you don't want to share it with a therapist, it gets everything out of your mind and it helps you move forward. I know another Amazon review I got, he's out of Tennessee, and he compared my book, because I write it from the first person. He was comparing my book that it's nothing like he's ever read besides William Stryon, and that's from Sophie's Choice. And he said that mine grabbed his heart and his throat and his mind just as deep, because it's written in the first person, and it's so it brings you into the character. Mm-hmm. So I hope
it does. That was my experience also from very beginning. It's written in a simple word, which is it brings the innocence and the purity of the heart immediately out. And then it just hits home. It really, it's done with the heart. And it's very vivid. And imagine, you know, it brings the vividness of the visual aspect for people who are visual, brings it home. So the way that you have written it really impacts the way that the message is actually given and landed for people. When you look at your own experience and then writing the book and today, the way that it's affecting, how does this whole, you know, process affected your life and your family's life?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's full circle, right?
Yes. Yes.
It really has. It's affected my life in different ways. I just really try to stay positive. Surround myself by positive people is huge. Mm-hmm. I really try to get rid of the negativity in my life. You know, if sometimes, you know, those negative people try to suck you in and I try really hard, I will be your friend, but I can't be your close friend because it drains me. So I think a great advice too, if you're in depression or you're sad, you really just need to surround yourself by people who feel good about themselves, or they give you inspiration. They pump you up. They're your cheerleader every day. And you can just live your life, I don't know, so much fuller. So that's my father, even though he was such an awful person to my mother, he inspired us by preaching, never think negative, always think positive. And I will never forget that. Like everything I do, you can look at your glass empty or you can look at your glass full, right? So I literally always try to look at the positive, even if it's a bad situation. Just really try to find what's positive, what's gratefulness about this situation. Don't go to the bottom half. So that's how I don't know. I think that's how I got through all my hard times, by just, you know, looking at the positive of it, not saying, woe is me, I'm so, this is awful. You know, there's good in this. this too.
I'm also sensing that even when it came to your dad, that although you were watching the areas you didn't like, and it was creating a lot of suffering for your mom and everybody else, you also were able to split and see the good side of him. Mm-hmm. And that the both, you were aware of both sides. The
right.
good side did not kind of get filtered out just because of seeing how he was producing pain.
Right. For some weird reason, I definitely understand both sides. You know, my father grew up in a very awful predicament. So his life was really awful, and he would never talk about it. His life was so awful, he barely ever gave us too much information. He really only told me about childhood in that one chapter that I talk about him. And that's the only thing I knew about him. So I think when you grow up in certain circumstances, you are only who you are because of the product you were surrounded by. And that's not an excuse. It's definitely not an excuse, but I understand where his anger came from. I understand my mother's point of view.
And I sense a lot of compassion from your side, from there. And when is it that in your life you created that compassion? Because was it always there as a child, or was it like fear as a child? And then at one point the compassion started showing up. What were your process of bringing your heart on your sleeve and really looking at both of them from a different eye?
My mother gave me a lot of compassion, I think. Mm-hmm. My mother was just full of life and so compassionate to every human being and loved everybody for who they are. It didn't walk a life they came from. So I probably didn't have that compassion when I was really little because I didn't understand it. But as I started growing up, probably more after my teenage years, probably having my own children probably helped me be more compassionate. And I just really, I'm kind of like my mother. I love all different kinds, different kinds of people. I understand all different kinds of people. Just because you might be this way and some people might not like it, I don't mind. I mean, you know, everybody is who they are because of certain background reasons.
Yes, and it's very important to look at, although your mom was going through a lot of depression, it seems like her heart was always filled with love.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. And it's amazing to see these dualities, Sherry, where someone is getting battered and they're going through depression, they're going through so much, and then their heart is always love and wanting to give, others. And then you also saw the duality of someone, your dad, who keeps saying, look at the positive side and look at the positive side. But when alcohol kind of like hijacked his brain, and then the rage showed up, couldn't really utilize the same thing for himself.
Yeah.
But it would really show that at other times he was really attempting to hold on to that. And maybe that was a message that he was constantly telling himself to be positive and don't go into a rage. And out of that life came you and your sisters, which are not only gone through a lot of this and created, anguish, all of that created anguish for yourself. But this part of you is striving to constantly, go toward positivity, toward light, toward getting, it's like that's what we need. It's like inside has been damaged. So we're constantly trying to get that and pour it in to heal ourselves. And I get that this, even writing this book must have been very healing for you.
Yeah, it was definitely healing. I definitely went into depression a little bit afterwards, probably for like 3 months after. I was like, woo. It brought you in a roller coaster because, I was suicidal as a child myself. So, your mother's suicidal, when I was a teenager, I became suicidal because you're dealing with everything. So some of the suicidal feelings that are in that book, I could write very easily because I could relate. So a lot of the, when you read about how it's written in the first person. So a lot of people say, how did you get into her mind? How did you know so well? Well, my mother, always told me everything. So the institution, she told us very clearly what went on. So in everything, she was very open. She was an open book. So I could write very easily on her behalf, and I could also write a little bit of my behalf in there too, because it was relatable.
How did this book affect your sisters?
It affected them in different ways. They weren't sure about a lot of it, you know. And me too, we're very private. It's just hysterical on how private I am. And then here I have this open book. It's just such a wonderful story that after I wrote it, I just really wanted to share it. Even though I'm crazy private, like literally so private. So it's kind of comical actually, but, I think that, you know, we all just know it. My mother was just such a great person. They supported me because it was her story. I tried to write it. It's not anybody else's story. It's just my mother's story. So my family was okay with it. You know, great. I didn't want to put any feelings of my sisters, you know, anybody in there. I mean, I had to mention them, but I didn't. I really tried to make the first person and my mother and my mother only.
Beautiful. Well, thank you for writing it. Thank you for being vulnerable. Thank you for allowing the world to get a glimpse of what it is from the inside of someone who's getting abused, from someone who has depression, who's suicidal, and to come back in the creation of the resiliency that all of you have had, and the inspiration and the hope of creating a great life for yourself. So thank you for sharing it. Thank you for the book. Thank you for being on my show. So everyone, please go to Amazon and get the book, The Shattered Oak by Sherry Jenga, and read it. It's a beautiful heart-to-heart inspiring book, and I'm sure that if you haven't gone through all the experiences, there's definitely some experiences that you will match. There's a part of you or someone around you that would actually match that, so that you would get inspired. Thank you again, Sherry.
Oh my gosh, thank you, and I hope you have a wonderful evening, and thank you for the nice conversation.
Absolutely, and for all of you who are out there, create an amazing life for yourself and everyone around you. Until next week, bye-bye.
Bye, thank you.